This podcast of The Exchange is sponsored by Northeast Credit Union, helping their members save money through free checking accounts and refinancing of auto, home, and personal loans. Northeast Credit Union, encouraging you to discover the difference at necu.org. Federally insured by NCUA, Equal Housing Opportunity.
And the Dagoba Group, a global diversity and inclusion consulting practice with specialties in unconscious bias, leadership dynamics, and client engagement. Authors of the book, The Inclusion Dividend. More at thedagobagroup.com.
And Dartmouth Hitchcock, creating a new model for healthcare where leading health systems collaborate to improve care for all of us. A sustainable system improving the health of our communities for years to come. Information at imagine.d-h.org.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. Extensive research now confirms that American teens need more sleep, that their mental and physical health depend upon it, and that high schools should respond by starting later. But the vast majority begin the day much earlier than the recommended 8:30 a.m., no matter what the American Academy of Pediatrics, the CDC, and others say. That's because changing schedules for a whole district is complicated for families, for schools, for clubs and sports teams, and it can cost money as more buses may be needed. Still, the research keeps piling up, and adolescent health experts are united, saying the benefits are worth it for teen academic success and overall well-being. Today in The Exchange, what time should that school bell ring? Let's hear from you. What do you think? The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. We begin with Evie Blodge. She's a staff writer for Education Week and author of a blog about non-academic issues that bear out on students' learning. And Evie, thank you so much for being with us. We appreciate it.
Thanks. Good morning.
Well, people have talked about this for a long time, Evie, but this school year, it seems to me, there's been even more attention to this issue of high school start times. How come?
Well, last year, the American Academy of Pediatrics put out a position paper that said middle schools and high schools should start after 8:30 a.m., which is a big change for a lot of school districts. I think a lot of parents might remember their school starting pretty early, but the truth is, over the years, the last 30 years particularly, schools have started earlier and earlier, in part because school districts use the same buses to transport kids to elementary schools as they do to high schools.
So it's a cost savings to do it earlier and earlier, although that's interesting. You're saying that over the years, high schools have bumped their times back, even as the research piles up, saying they should bump it forward?
That's right. A lot of districts, if they're going to use the same bus and they're going to have to transport some students earlier and some later, would rather have the younger students out waiting for the bus later when it's more likely to be lighter out. And so over time, as school districts have grown and budgets have become more constrained, that's a choice that many have made. And so while a lot of parents might remember going to school pretty early, the chances are their child is likely going to school earlier than they did. So even as this research comes out, even as the American Academy of Pediatrics makes a strong stand, recently the CDC did a report and concluded that 4 out of 6 American high schools and middle schools aren't starting before 8:30, which is still actually earlier than a lot of scientists would say that schools should be starting.
Wow, so the CDC in August and recently the American Academy of Pediatrics, an international group of sleep researchers at Oxford and Harvard, and we'll talk to one of those in a minute. So all these experts are saying, have the kids start later. What about the idea, you know, some parents listening may think, well, just have the teens go to bed earlier and then they can get up earlier. You know, suck it up, kids. What about that, Evie?
Yeah, that actually really contributes to the inertia in this issue. The desire to keep things the same or not to disrupt, you know, kind of what we've constructed over the years with family schedules and after school time. There's this perception that teens are just lazy, that they don't have a lot of self-control and that they're staying up late texting their friends all night. All of those things could be true, but sleep researchers have said that adolescents' rhythms for sleep are actually different. So the things that trigger melatonin, which is the chemical that makes you sleepy, actually kick in later at night for teens. And they also need an extra hour of sleep because of the state of biology they're in. And so that causes them to need to wake up later in the morning. So even if a teenager was completely disciplined and put the cell phone away and really understood sleep science and went to bed on time, they're saying that we're kind of starting them at a disadvantage by making them start their day so early.
And a little bit later in the program, again, we'll have a leading sleep researcher who was on that American Academy of Pediatrics statement strongly recommending later start times for schools. You can join us, too, as we talk about this, 1-800-892-6477. We're looking at more and more research piling up, making the case for much later school start times, especially for high schoolers. 1-800-892-6477 is the number. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Again, 1-800-892-6477. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. So, Evie, we talked about, again, all the research, and you explained some of the biological things that are going on. Give us a little more on the resistance that you've heard beyond the sort of, well, we'd like to save money on buses. Where else does the resistance to this come from?
Yeah, superintendents I've talked to have said that this is one of the most potent issues that they can raise with the public.
Really?
Yeah, in part, you know, there are a lot of folks who support the idea of making changes, and then there are just a whole lot of folks who've gotten used to their town's schedule functioning this way, their family schedule functioning this way. There's the idea of what will happen to sports and after school clubs. There's the notion that some younger siblings rely on older siblings to get home at a certain time to make sure they're okay. If you move the start time of a high school to later, then it's also going to get out later, and it's going to change that family dynamic. And there's also the notion that perhaps under current schedules, there are folks who it could function better for them if things were changed, but they've gotten so used to the status quo that they're not complaining. So in a lot of cases, superintendents say the folks that they hear from are the ones who are resistant to the change, not the ones who are supportive of it.
Well, joining us now, Evie, is someone who's in the thick of this conversation. Erin Bockham is with us. She's an eighth grade U.S. history teacher at Portsmouth Middle School, and she's on a district committee examining earlier start times. And Erin Bockham, thanks for being with us. We appreciate it.
I appreciate you having me. Thank you very much.
So what's Portsmouth looking at right now, Erin?
Well, literally, the initial conversations are starting this week. We have a meeting on Thursday to really look for our district. This is something that we've looked at again and again over a couple of years, over kind of a spread of time. So truly, it's not a point yet to say this is what we want to do, other than really committing to the idea that we've seen so many studies coming out from reputable, you know, big companies and medical fields saying that this really is in the best interest of the kids. And I think systemically, when you realize that this is something that will positively impact kids, at some point you have to look past the obstacles and figure out how do we make this happen. And there's a wealth of schools across the country that have already done this, which makes it easier that you're not recreating the wheel. I think there's a lot of creative options out there of how you can make this work despite some of the obstacles that may be in the way.
So what's your perspective on this as a teacher of eighth graders?
With eighth grade, you know, over the years, and I also worked in high school in California, you definitely see that we are in class going at 7:35 in the morning. And, you know, as somebody that's passionate about this topic, I've talked to kids about when do they wake up in the morning, when do they go to bed. And we have several outlying school districts that feed into ours. And for our kids that are in Newington, they're on the bus by 6:15 in the morning.
Wow, so, that is,
yeah.
They're on the bus by 6:15?
Exactly. So because it's a rural area to get here, and you know, obviously that's a small group of kids that are coming, but when
still, those poor kids.
Exactly. You know, and then we really see it when you have like a delayed entry due to snow, weather, things like this. And last year we had our professional development. The difference between my first period at 7:30 in the morning versus at 9:30 in the morning is huge. It's really pretty undeniable.
The level of
interest is being awake, being able to function, to hop right into things.
How so? Give us a little more on that. When they come in at 9:30 because of a snowstorm versus, you know, dragging in at 7:30.
Absolutely. Well, And part of it is the excitement of a snowstorm. There definitely is, you know, some enthusiasm from that. But in terms of just being awake, I oftentimes have kids. I'm a morning person myself, so for me, I get up in the morning. I don't snooze alarm. I go. I have kids, too, that live close to school that literally wake up at about 10 minutes after and run down. And we think as adults about having a good breakfast, about getting ready, about really becoming about being ready to learn. We know that kids are not getting, you know, between 8 and 9 hours of sleep. And if you back up our 7:30 start times, really looking at what would that require in terms of kids being able to get that recommended time, you're not getting 8th graders and 10th graders and 11th graders in bed at 8 o'clock. And I don't think that's a reasonable expectation with the lives that they lead. I think when we really look at when they're going to bed and, you know, what we need to get them to not have that chronic sleep deficit. And I think that most students do, which is why we see kids sleeping in so much on the weekend. But in terms of, you know, first thing in the morning, when you're giving assignments and going over directions, and for kids that are dazed out or putting their heads down, and you know that they're just legitimately tired, they haven't begun waking up, working around. It's kind of a slow process because of that. I truly believe a sleep deficit that they've incurred.
So how do other teachers feel about this? Is there a consensus among your colleagues there at Portsmouth Middle School on that this is a good idea or not?
You know, it's interesting. I think there's a lot of different adult perspectives. When we had initially looked at this, we'd done a large-scale district survey, I believe back now, maybe 2006, 2007, where we surveyed staff, we surveyed students, we surveyed parents with over 1,000 responses. And, you know, like with kids, there's mixes. But I've always gone back and looking at this issue that is it about what teachers want or is it about what's best for kids? And I think when you really look at some of the research that's come out and continues to come out, it's very difficult to find reasons why this isn't in the best interest of kids. It truly, the issues with making this not happen come to obstacles. But find me something that says it's actually better for kids, for their well-being to start early. You can't find it.
Well, the American Academy of Pediatrics, the CDC,
yes.
So many other studies. Although, you know, our other guest, Evie Blod with Education Week, told us at the beginning of the show, Erin, this is the hottest issue that superintendents say they deal with. So what do you think of that?
Well, I think for one of the things in education is we make decisions that impact everybody. So are there some kids in high school who are perfectly capable and are wide awake at 7:30 in the morning? Yes, there are some. But when we look at the best interest for kids, and I know that when I'd initially looked at this issue back almost 10 years ago now and really started digging in, I was really struck by some of the evidence, even just thinking about looking at the school day, not for the obstacles, but in terms of when you have high school kids and middle school kids getting out at 2:30 and looking at what time parents are working to and what does that unsupervised time look like. One of the issues I know that I briefly heard mentioned was the notion that maybe older kids were needed to watch younger kids until parents came home. I have to tell you, in the responses that we had, that was not the issue that was an impediment. And I also think you have to look as a community at, okay, if there are some bridges in getting childcare coverage, what options in the community do we have to help working parents? But thinking about unsupervised, you know, teenager time between 2:30 and 5 or 6 when parents get home.
Yeah, that's supposedly the witching hour in terms of bad behavior.
It is, and there's upticks in juvenile crime. And in a community like Portsmouth, I don't think we're seeing huge juvenile crime between 2:30 and 5 or 6. But I think nationwide these things do make sense that, you know, what does that unstructured time look like when we talk about issues with buses and we talk about issues with sports schedules? Is that the biggest issue for all of our students, or is that an issue that we need to address for a segment of students?
Well, and Evie also mentioned concerns in some communities about the costs, though. You know, districts are able to save money now by using the same buses and the same bus drivers. So if you change this up, you might have to spend more money on more buses and more drivers. Are people talking about that in Portsmouth?
There's one option. That is a option, but I don't think that's the only option. I think, you know, yes, you want to maximize the number of runs that a bus takes because that, you know, you're paying a price per bus for whether it takes 5 runs during the day or whether it can make 19 runs. So obviously you want to maximize that. You have to look at different, you know, is this adding to the buses or are you adjusting schedules district-wide? You know, are you looking at impacting elementary schedules as well? There's a number of different ways to look at this, and I think in Portsmouth this is the starting point. I don't think anything's off or on the, you know, off the table at this point. And the nice thing is, I think when you look systemically, because this keeps coming up with, you know, the American, the Pediatric Association, with other groups, when you have other schools locally looking at this, I think it's easier to make big systemic changes versus being one district in isolation. And I think that that may be the key to success this time, and having Oyster River and having other districts that have done this and looking at what could we do collectively seacoast-wise, because this may impact everybody's sports schedules.
Right.
How can we work with that together? And I think that honestly could be the key for this timing.
Sure, because, you know, sports, I mean, not every kid plays sports, but they do compete against other schools. So if one school gets out at 3 and wants to hold
Absolutely.
A track meet at 4, and the other school doesn't get out till 4 and they want to hold a track meet at 5, it gets a little complicated. But as you said earlier, it's all about the kids, their health, their academic success.
And if it goes back to what's best for the kids, I think that these are small obstacles that we just need creative thinking. And I think the great thing is there's a wealth of information on how other districts have done this. So you're not recreating the wheel. You look and see what has worked well, what might work well in our community. And if we believe this is the best thing that we should do, according to these reports, how do we get this done?
Okay, so what's next for your committee, Erin?
I'll find out on Thursday. Just starting work on that. So I'm excited to get back into it and talk with other people who are interested in this and seeing what we can do to, you know, create a solution that works for Portsmouth.
All right. Especially for those kids who are on that bus at 6:15. Oh, my goodness.
I know. Isn't that tough? It's hard to hear.
Erin, thank you so much for being with us. Really appreciate it.
Thank you very much for having me.
That's Erin Bockham. She's an 8th grade U.S. history teacher at Portsmouth Middle School. She's on a district committee, as we heard, examining earlier start times. The exchange number for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477. What time does school start in your district? What time do you think it should start? 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. Again, 1-800-892-6477. Evie Blatt is with us, staff writer for Education Week. And joining us now from Boston, Dr. Judith Owens, director of sleep medicine at Boston Children's Hospital, the lead author of the American Academy of Pediatrics statement regarding later start times for schools. She's also on the national board for the Start School Later organization. And Dr. Judith Owens, welcome. It's great to have you. She's not there. Okay, we will be with her in just a moment. Apparently, there's a nasty traffic jam there in Boston. Evie Blatt, I would like to get your quick thoughts on what we heard from Erin in Portsmouth, how it's not just one district, it's kind of everybody in that adjoining district.
Yeah, Portsmouth's experience sounds a lot like what I've heard from other districts, which is a lot of times this is a multi-year process. This isn't something that they decide one month and do the next. Sometimes it'll start with a committee of parents and teachers and students who petition the board to consider this, and sometimes it'll start with a board resolution that will say, we don't know what we're going to do yet, but we're going to make some changes. And there's usually a lot of public input involved in making decisions to kind of find a middle ground, to find where the resistance points are, how late could we push this, and then to make some sort of a resolution there. Sometimes that earns public buy-in, and sometimes it just helps the district kind of consider what's the least distasteful option for parents who are kind of resistant to the idea.
All right.
Schools can function kind of as an ecosystem if there's closely clustered districts. And what they're saying in Portsmouth also really resonates the notion that, you know, these ideas aren't happening in a vacuum, that schools are kind of borrowing from each other. A lot of districts will do kind of surveys of neighboring school start times.
And Evie, I got to jump in on you there. I do apologize. You're listening to The Exchange on NHPR. More of our conversation on making the case for later high school start times in a moment. First, let's check in with our fall fun drive. So go ahead, Evie. I did want to let you finish up your point there on the idea that it isn't just one school, it's this whole ecosystem.
Yeah, that's right. So schools can kind of function and share each other's ideas. Here in Washington, D.C., two large suburban districts changed their start times this year, one a little more minor up in Montgomery County, Maryland. But, you know, I've heard from folks in the area who say they feel like it's affecting traffic patterns. Everything kind of relies, habits get formed and structures get built up around how these schools work as community anchors. And so that's a part of this conversation, too.
Again, the number here in the exchange is 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org, 1-800-892-6477. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. Today in the exchange, we're talking about high school start times and middle school start times, when that bell should ring for teenagers, given all the research that says it should ring much later than it does now for better sleep, better health, and academic success. Again, our number 1-800-892-6477. Our guest is Evie Blodd. She's staff writer for Education Week and author of a blog about non-academic issues that bear on students' learning. 1-800-892-6477 is our number. Evie, we also heard from Erin in Portsmouth about the idea that, you know, it's all about the kids. I mean, parents, you know, we know it's about you and your schedule and so forth, but that's the fundamental message. I wonder, though, I mean, you know, people have concerns. I wonder what you've heard from parents as you've covered this issue around the country.
Yeah, I mean, I think parents recognize that there's a whole lot of things that schools could do and change to make things work, but there's also sort of, I think, a lot of folks fighting for what they see as realistic to change. And I do think this whole notion of the understanding of sleep science and how that affects teenagers is a big part of this. You know, a blog post I wrote about this recently was received a lot of comments on social media and on the post itself that said, if you move school start times later, my kid is going to stay up an hour later. Mm. And that it's basically just giving a child permission to indulge in bad habits. So that's part of the resistance here, is this notion that the perception of teenagers as people who have a lack of self-control and maybe not the best habits. And I think a lot of parents might not recognize how much earlier school starts than it did when they were younger. You know, you've got states with average school start times before 7:45, and that's considerably earlier than it used to be.
Well, and as we look at this biological issue, we're joined now by Dr. Judith Owens, Director of Sleep Medicine at Boston Children's, the lead author of the American Academy of Pediatrics statement regarding later start times for schools. She's also on the national board of the Start School Later organization. So, Dr. Owens, just reading that title, I'm guessing this is a very passionate issue for you. Good morning. Thank you for being with us.
Good morning. Good morning. Yes, absolutely. You know, I've been monitoring and involved in this issue for 7 or 8 years now, and had a personal experience with my own daughter, who was attending an independent school that changed their start time by just a half hour from 8 to 8:30. And we studied the upshot of that and found that even with that 30-minute difference, across the board, every outcome that we looked at, ranging from self-reported depression to visits to the health center to tardiness, significantly improved after the change. And I saw it personally in my own child, who was a much happier, productive person as a result.
Wow. So depression, visits to the nurse's office, and so forth. We'll dig into a lot more of this after a short break. Stay with us. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
This is a special pledge-free stream on NHPR.org. You'll hear no pledge breaks to interrupt your enjoyment of this morning's exchange program. NHPR is able to provide this service because of the reliable and ongoing financial support of you, our sustaining members. There's a flood watch in effect for all of New Hampshire through tomorrow morning. Rain today, heavy at times, highs mid to upper 60s. Mostly cloudy tonight, chance of evening showers, cooler, less humid. Lows tonight, mid to upper 40s. It'll be mostly cloudy for tomorrow. North Country could see some breaks of sunshine. Highs tomorrow, mid to upper 50s. Mostly cloudy, chance of showers Friday. Highs in the mid 50s. And mostly cloudy, a chance of showers on Saturday. High temperatures, mid to upper 50s. Once again, you're listening to a special pledge-free stream of The Exchange on NHPR.org.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, we're talking with Education Week reporter Evie Blod and Dr. Judith Owens, director of sleep medicine at Boston Children's Hospital, about all the research piling up on how later high school start times could dramatically benefit teens. You can join us, too, at 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter, 1-800-892-6477. What time do your middle school and high school start in your district? What time do you think they should start? Again, 1-800-892-6477. And Dr. Owens, talking about some of the health issues surrounding these later start times, what have you noticed in those few districts that have gone to that recommended 8:30 start time?
Well, there's been a number of studies now which have looked at the impact of what we like to term healthy school start times on both middle, as you mentioned, schools and high school students. And what we see is improvements in mood, as was mentioned, improvements in attendance, decrease in tardiness levels, improvement in academic achievement, including performance on standardized tests. One of the things that I think is most dramatic from a health standpoint is a reduction in adolescent car crashes. And in a study that was published just last year, they found as much as a 66 to 70% decrease in car accidents.
Wow.
Among teenagers.
That's huge.
Absolutely. You know, it's hard to imagine a public health measure that would have more impact than that. So, you know, this comes down to a life and death situation, if you will. And obviously not all of those crashes were fatal. But, you know, nonetheless, we know, for example, that the impairments associated with insufficient sleep are equivalent to those of consuming alcoholic beverages. And so, you know, a parent would never knowingly let their teen get behind the wheel having consumed 3 or 4 beers. But we do that every day when we allow kids to drive themselves to school with, you know, chronic sleep loss.
Wow, that's terrifying. And I happen to live in the neighborhood of Concord High School. So
there you go.
Right. Well, Evie Blod and Dr. Judith Owens, I do want to bring another voice into our conversation quickly. With us now on the phone from Massachusetts is Tom Conrad. He's the superintendent of the Nauset Public Schools in the Cape Cod area. He's also a former high school principal, and his district did change its start times several years ago. And Tom Conrad, great to have you. Thanks for being with us.
Well, thank you for having me on, and it's a very, very important topic, obviously, for every system in the country.
So what times do schools start now, Tom, in your district, elementary, middle, and high school?
Sure. So first of all, let's start with the high school. Our original schedule had us starting at 7:25 and getting out at 1:47.
Wow, that's early.
And yeah, that's a pretty typical time down here, and I think in most districts. And we shifted to starting our school at 8:35 and getting out at 2:57.
Uh-huh.
And because of the change of the high school, we adjusted our middle school schedule to a start time of 8:30 and getting out at 2:45. And, of course, our youngest students starting the earliest, and they adjusted to a 7:45 to 2 p.m. School day.
So when did you make this change, Tom, and how come?
Well, we had been looking at the research for a number of years, particularly out of Brown University, and we were seeing students who were rushing to school, and it seemed like every student in our high school had 1,000 students at the time, and getting as much caffeine as they could, and quite honestly, following the research, at times we would want our teachers to not shut their lights off in the first block class. They'd put their kids back to sleep. And so we spent a few years looking at the research and then made a big push district-wide to flip our schedule, and we made that switch in 2012.
So what was the toughest thing you had to work around, Tom?
Sports.
Sports, okay.
It's the after-school activities, in my opinion. And And through our research and working with other districts to look at this issue, I haven't encountered a great deal of difficulty with the research. Most people agree with the research, and many parents who have raised children have witnessed this adolescent sleep issue. The trouble then is putting it in place, and in many districts, that means shifting your sports programs around, and sometimes that's been unsuccessful in various school districts.
What kind of feedback, when you first presented this a couple years back, did you get from parents and teachers at first?
Well, at first, it was like, if we're finding great academic success already, why do we need to fool around with this?
Sure.
And then for us, we're a regional system, and as the superintendent, I deal with five different boards. Each of the towns, the four towns, have their own elementary school committee, and then there's a regional school committee for the middle school and high school. So there was a lot of issues around dealing with five different school committees relative to the switches that had to be made. And I think the key for us was really looking at the data and realizing that we were missing the boat in terms of the optimum educational opportunities in that first block. And we're a block high school, so we have 4 85-minute blocks in the day.
So you made this shift in 2012. How's it going? I mean, have you seen marked differences?
Let's talk about a couple of the points that we looked at, and it's pretty common that most districts are interested in their tardy issues and so forth. Hours dropped over 30%.
Tardiness.
First fall. Tardiness dropped over 30%, and that has continued through the switch. And the other piece that we looked at, interesting enough, was we were very, very concerned about the students on the lower end of the grades, students who were getting D's and S's, and assuming that our teachers would keep the same curriculum, of course, and same academic standards. We compared the numbers of D's and F's in that switch to the later start time, and they dropped over 35%.
Wow, a drop.
Fewer D's and F's. And,
that's amazing.
And the interesting thing, and we're in our fourth year of this, I can tell you, once it was put in place, I think it was embraced. And across the district, I think people were very, very pleased of this this switch. And in our athletic program, certainly didn't have any issues by going to a little bit later start time.
So the only people, Tom Conrad, that I heard might not be happy about this is the local coffee shops, right? I heard that they're not selling as much coffee as they used to.
That's absolutely true. And it's interesting in talking with my staff, and we think often about the student situation, but our staff was also in a position of rushing onto campus for a 7:25 start.
Sure.
Many of them are now coming in just a little bit later than that, but they have almost an hour to prepare for the day.
So they feel better prepared.
They feel better, and they tell me that they are far better prepared for teaching
okay.
in this model than the old.
Well, Tom Conrad, it's great to hear from you. Thank you very much for being with us.
And it's nice to talk with you.
Bye-bye. That's Tom Conrad, superintendent of the Nauset Public Schools in the Cape Cod area. His district, as we heard, changed its start times in 2012 and has seen some pretty dramatic results. You can join us 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. We'd love to hear from you this morning, 1-800-892-6477. So both of you, Evie Blod and Dr. Owens, pretty dramatic results there from Tom Conrad. Evie Blod, have you heard this repeated elsewhere?
Yeah, actually, in this international researchers put together this article that came out last month. They pointed to several examples of dramatic shifts in discipline, in academics, in achievement that happened in districts that made these changes. These researchers actually said, ideally, if you're following sleep patterns, high school would start at 10 a.m.
Oh,
for
wow.
16-year-olds. They said, we know that that's not something that a lot of schools are going to do, but even any kind of incremental movement between the current early start times
and much later is going to make a difference. And schools are spending a lot of money right now on initiatives to boost student engagement in the classroom, professional development for teachers and things like that. And the researchers say, well, this is something that may have some front-end costs associated with it, but it could have similar or larger effects than those kind of interventions.
So, Dr. Owens, I've looked at the numbers and I've looked at the research. And, you know, as we've said repeatedly this hour, all the research stacks up on later start times. But most schools, the vast majority, do not do this still, despite all the work that you and others are doing. How come, Dr. Owens?
Well, that's correct. There was a recent report from the CDC that found that less than one in five schools start at the recommended middle and high schools at the recommended 8:30 or later. So clearly we have a ways to go. I think some of the challenges that were mentioned by Mr. Conrad, and I want to applaud him for his leadership and vision in seeing this through, because I'm sure it wasn't an easy sell. But sports, you know, athletics, particularly if the community uses school-based facilities for community use, for pools or for other kinds of athletic endeavors, that's a big conflict. Childcare is a big issue, you know, particularly if the adolescents are expected to come home and provide childcare for their younger siblings. But I will say that one of the things that we've found in talking to school districts around the country is, number one, many times the anticipated problems far exceed the actuality. And once the shift is made, things like traffic patterns and parents' work schedules and childcare issues work themselves out, particularly if you give communities enough lead time to make those kinds of adjustments. So, for example, I worked with Fairfax County, Virginia.
That's a big district.
It's the 11th largest school district in the country with some 183,000 students. And after 15 years of effort, we finally saw the school committee vote to put delayed school start times through, and that happened this very month. And we're in the process of hopefully studying the outcomes of that very large and diverse school district. But certainly there was a lot of pushback from the community. But eventually I think everybody really came around, recognized the validity of the science, and the fact that this really is a health issue as much as it is an academic issue.
Here's a couple emails that have come in. Jeffrey says, why do our schools get out so early in the afternoon? They don't have farms to go home to work on anymore. Jeffrey says, today's schedule is a dinosaur. We should modernize the school system in this country. Start and end the school day times being just part of the modernization. He says the school day should be changed to be more in sync with parents' work schedules. School priorities should be focused on academics firstly and not sports. And, you know, Evie, we've talked a lot about the sports, but not every kid plays on a sports team by any means. So I just wonder what you've heard as you report on this around the country.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there is that sort of a sense. This is fitting into a time when schools are talking about changing their schedules and calendars in all sorts of ways. While we're talking about changing the time schools start, we're also talking about a lot of after-school initiatives and things to help students who may be less academically engaged work on social-emotional issues and things like that. I think that there are some parents who say that, you know, sports and after-school activities shouldn't drive the conversation, but those are also big drivers in a lot of small communities that are having these sorts of discussions, and so they do oftentimes bear a lot of weight in the conversation.
We'll talk more in just a moment. This is The Exchange on NHPR. Let's check in with our fall fun drive. Again, if you'd like to join us, the number is 1-800 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. Again, 1-800-892-6477. A couple more emails have come in. Here's one from Ginny, who says, perhaps the bus problem could be solved or eased by having more students walk to school. Except for the trees, my grandchildren can see their schools from their house, and yet they take the bus every day. With the help of parent volunteers participating in safe walks, the number of buses could be reduced. Savings for the districts and a side benefit of healthy kids. That's Ginny in Center Harbor. Ginny, thank you. And what do you think, Dr. Owens? More kids could walk to school.
Well, that's certainly a great point in some communities, particularly more urban school districts. The comment earlier about how has this whole situation evolved, really in the 1960s, when the baby boomers kind of entered the school population, many school districts went to what's called a tiered busing system. So essentially, they pick up one set of students, drop them off, and then go back out into the community and pick up the second set or even the third set. So that means somebody needs to go first, second, and third. And, you know, the initial thoughts were, well, we don't want elementary school kids waiting for the bus in the dark. And that's kind of how this whole situation happened. But it's become very entrenched and becomes a challenge for communities to really make changes in that. The other point that I wanted to make about sports is, number one, there is some data suggesting that teenagers who do not sleep enough are more likely to get injured during the course of athletic activities. So that's one consideration. We also know that well-rested students are more likely to perform better on the sports field. So those are important things to keep in mind. And also, one of the things that we're working on, hopefully in Massachusetts, is statewide implementation of delayed school start times, which would eliminate a lot of this tension about school districts that play each other in athletics starting and ending at different times.
Sure, if the whole state does it, it makes it a lot easier. Let's go to the phones, both of you, and Betsy's joining us from Dover. Hi, Betsy. You're on the exchange. Welcome.
Good morning. I'm on the Dover School Board, and this past year we tried to implement a later start time just for middle school and elementary with a goal of changing our high school start time for all the great reasons. So we did a parent and staff survey, and we found the community was split. So my question for you is, how do you overcome a split community when literally half wants it and half does not? Which side you fall on, and I'll take the comment or your response off air.
Well, Betsy, if I could quickly ask you a question before you head out.
Yeah.
The people who didn't want to do it, what was their concern?
Well, I think one of the things that we did wrong is we actually tried to push it through too close to the start of school. I think we're about 2.5 months up before school started for the change, and that didn't allow time for the daycare change, work change. But the biggest problem we found was people had work issues. And for working parents who really have no choice with what time they start work, they don't have flexibility, we're trying to figure out how do we overcome that.
Wow.
And so that was the biggest barrier here in Dover.
Betsy, thank you so much for calling in. And Evie, have you heard stories like this? A community is completely split, 50-50, as Betsy said.
Yeah, I talked to the Durham School District, which is preparing in North Carolina, preparing to change school start times next year, and they said they didn't overcome it. They said every option they presented was about a 50-50 split, including keeping the status quo. And so what they had to do was figure out what was best for their finances, best logistically, and could come as close as possible to complying with the research. Another big problem that you run into is we talk a lot about parents of teenagers understanding the sleep needs, but when you change high school and middle school start times, you're probably changing elementary schools too.
Sure,
so
it's
you've
all
got to get buy-in
puzzle.
From,
yeah.
Yeah, buy-in from those parents who might not understand
what's going on with those older kids. Let me jump in, Evie, for a moment, please. More on the mismatch between teenage sleep needs and school start times on The Exchange on NHPR.
You're listening to a special pledge-free stream of The Exchange on NHPR.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, Planned Parenthood and the debate over fetal tissue research. Then novelist Erica Jong on feminism, mortality, and sex after 60, all coming up on The Diane Rehm Show.
The Diane Rehm Show, this morning from 10 till noon on NHPR's pledge-free stream at nhpr.org. There's a flood watch in effect for all of New Hampshire through tomorrow morning. Rain today will be heavy at times, high temperatures mid to upper 60s. Mostly cloudy tonight, chance of evening showers, cooler and less humid, lows tonight mid to upper 40s. It'll be mostly cloudy tomorrow. North Country could see some breaks of sunshine, high temperatures mid to upper 50s. And mostly cloudy, chance of showers Friday, highs in the mid 50s. Once again, this is a special pledge-free stream of The Exchange on NHPR.org.
This is The Exchange on NHPR. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today we're talking about the disconnect between teenage sleep patterns and high school and middle school schedules. Our guests are Evie Blodd. She's a staff writer for Education Week, author of a blog about non-academic issues that bear on students' learning. Also, Dr. Judith Owens, director of sleep medicine at Boston Children's Hospital. She's the lead author of the American Academy of Pediatrics statement regarding later start times for schools. She's also on the national board of the Start School Later organization. You can join us, too, with your questions and comments. What time does school start in your district? What time do you think it should start? 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. You can find us on Facebook or Twitter. One more time, that number, 1-800-892-6477. And Dr. Owens, I am interested in this group that you're working with, the Start School Later organization. When did you guys get started, and what sort of feedback have you gotten from state and local school leaders?
Well, I think this organization started a number of years ago, really as a grassroots group. And that's a reflection to a certain extent that in many communities, it's actually groups of parents who kind of bring this issue to the forefront and really work tirelessly. You know, these are all volunteers who have seen the effects of early school start time oftentimes on their own children and really have taken this on in a very dedicated and passionate way. And so there are now over 40 chapters. I will note that New Hampshire does not have a state chapter of Start School Later, so perhaps some of the listeners will be inspired to start one. But I think what the organization does is it really helps individual districts and communities with the process. It's not necessary for every community to reinvent the wheel. As we've heard this morning, many school districts are facing the same kinds of challenges. And, you know, hearing stories about how other school districts have successfully accomplished this really helps these communities that are struggling with these kinds of issues. And really, education and engagement of the community are really key to this, as well as leadership. Superintendent and the school boards in these different districts really are tremendously important in terms of really taking this bull by the horns and saying this is in the best interest of our students and we're going to do this. We want to educate and engage the community, but this is the right thing to do.
Well, and most people listening now likely live in a district where start times probably won't change, at least in the short run. So I wonder, Evie, what you've heard about what else parents could do, for example, if their school sticks with some of these very early times that we're talking about. I mean, if the reality is school is not changing, at least this year, what else do people recommend that parents do?
Yeah, well, I mean, parents obviously can help their teenagers work the best they can within the schedule that they have. So if you're in a bad situation where, you know, if you have a teenager whose sleep and wake times are really off schedule with the school schedule, don't make it worse by absorbing that blue light from a tablet, a computer, or a phone at night that science says is going to make you stay up later, and develop some good, consistent waking habits. The time you wake up can have a big effect on on your overall mood and energy level. And that's a big part of it, too. So parents can encourage their teens to develop good habits.
So take away the smartphone at night so that they're not waking up and texting at midnight or staying up and texting till midnight.
Yeah, that's right.
So developing habits there. What about sleeping in on the weekends, Dr. Owens?
Yeah, that's a problem. Because it really doesn't help you be more alert, attentive and productive and efficient at getting your work done during the week. And it also further contributes to this natural shift that adolescents have as they go through puberty in their circadian rhythms. So I think it's important to emphasize the point that this is a biological imperative. This isn't just lazy teenagers wanting to stay up for an extra hour. The average teenager can't fall asleep much before 11 and needs between 8.5 and 9.5 hours of sleep. So if you do the math, they're really biologically programmed to wake up at around 8 o'clock in the morning. So sleeping in on weekends further pushes that circadian rhythm later, for one thing. And then if you sleep until noon or 1 o'clock in the afternoon on Sunday, there's no way you're going to be able to get to sleep at a reasonable time Sunday night. And that creates a situation which we call social jet lag, which means that you've shifted your circadian rhythm even later. And it takes one day for each time zone crossed, if you will, if you want to think about it in real jet lag terms. And so by the time these kids' circadian rhythms kind of readjust, the whole situation starts all over again.
Oh, but it feels so good to sleep in on weekends for them. I know teenagers who sleep till, noon on Sunday.
Yeah, it does.
And they love it.
They do, and it's very hard to convince them that that is, really creating an even worse situation. The other thing that we do recommend is doing strategic napping. And when I say strategic, I mean timing and duration.
You mean not during algebra class?
Preferably, yes. And that's a huge issue. Talk to any teacher in high school and who's unfortunate enough to teach in first or second period class, and, three-quarters of the students have their heads down on the desk. But napping in the sort of mid to late afternoon during that circadian dip that we all experience, 3, 4, 5 o'clock in the afternoon, and sleeping for only 20 minutes to a half hour. Because if you sleep for longer than that, you're more likely to go into what we call deep or slow wave sleep. And when you try to wake up from deep sleep, you kind of have this groggy, confused kind of feeling, which we call sleep inertia. So sleeping for shorter periods of time, taking advantage of that circadian window, can help recharge batteries.
Wait, Dr. Owens, sorry to interrupt, are you recommending like nap time during high school?
Yeah. If your push comes to shove and you're not able to get enough sleep at night, which many students are unable to do, taking a power nap in the late afternoon can really be very helpful.
What about teachers, Evie? I read somewhere that, if you're in a district, they're not going to change. At least teachers who have those early morning classes can try and do something a little more flashy and engaging, knowing that kids are half asleep.
Yeah. Make sure your kids are interested and personally engaged in the subject matter. Some schools even have shifted what they would consider less essential classes to the first periods and shifted the more core academic subjects later in the day to recognize kind of patterns of wakefulness in teenagers.
A couple emails have come in. Here's one from Ray in Whitefield. A recent article I read indicated by extending lunchtime, students would eat more nutritious food and thus maybe achievement would improve. That sounds like another show, Ray, but I appreciate the comment. Here's another one from Scott in Jackson. To your guest's comment about adjusting to a new schedule, when I was in high school in the Conway district, we were on double sessions because the high school and the junior high shared the same building, and the high school start time was 6:30 a.m. So between an hour bus ride and chores, Scott says, my alarm went off at 4:30 a.m. Wow. Scott says, obviously changing to a more normal schedule was a huge shift, but it all worked out pretty smoothly. Thanks for those emails. You're listening to The Exchange on NHPR. Let's check in with our fall fun drive. Another email came in, Dr. Owens and Evie. This is from Nicole. She says, I do think that if a lack of sleep is an issue, one needs to take into consideration what the children are doing. If they're not at work in the evenings, it seems it may be the problem lies more with parental control. Many parents today simply do not instill rules and follow through, and children do not listen. As the parent of a middle school student and elementary student, I enforce bedtime. She goes on, and Nicole, I won't read the whole thing, but thank you so much. What do you think about this, Dr. Owens, that, you know, parents just need to put their feet down and enforce bedtimes?
Well, certainly, as Evie alluded to, the restrictions and limitations on electronic devices, parents really can have considerable influence over those kinds of things. In terms of expecting a 15-year-old to go to bed at 9 o'clock, it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen because of the biological changes that I mentioned, but, you know, also there's homework and there's, you know, all kinds of competing priorities. Now, parents can put some limitations on things like after-school employment, the number of activities that their children are involved in, and clearly personal responsibility on the part of the adolescent is also a piece of all this. So we don't discount the importance of that, but at the end of the day, you have to have an adequate window opportunity to sleep in order to fulfill your sleep needs, and parents have limited control over that if school starts at 7:20.
Well, and Nicole goes on to say, if my adolescent, and she said she has a middle schooler and elementary school child, if my adolescent has to be on the bus at 6:30, then gets home at 5:30 because of sports, we have dinner, chores, homework, a bit of downtime. She says, if all goes well, then it is off to bed at 7:30, 8 o'clock, maybe not straight to sleep as my child likes to read a book, but with that long day, sleep usually comes in about 20 minutes. She says, I don't think the conversation includes enough about parental rules and enforcement. So, Dr. Owens, you would say maybe fine for a middle schooler, but once you get 15, 16, 17, that's just not going to work.
Yes, that's, well, it has to do not only with chronological age, but with pubertal stage. And she may be fortunate enough not to have her son or daughter have hit that pubertal development period yet. And that's why they can fall asleep at, you know, 8 or 8:30. But as I mentioned, you know, the average teenager really has a hard time falling asleep much before 11 p.m. because that's what their circadian rhythm is telling them to do.
Well, Erin Bauckham, Evie Blad, just to finish up with you, Education Week, going to be looking at more at this issue in the future. Do you think more schools are going to change, Evie?
Yeah, we're going to keep an eye on it. I mean, it's a persistent perennial issue that is worth following for sure.
Okay. Well, Evie Blad, thank you so much for being with us. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
That's Evie Blad, staff writer for Education Week, author of a blog about non-academic issues that bear on students' learning. Dr. Judith Owens, it was great to have you too. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you very much.
Dr. Judith Owens, Director of Sleep Medicine at Boston Children's Hospital, lead author of the American Academy of Pediatrics statement regarding later start times for schools. Dr. Owens is also on the national board of the Start School Later organization. The Exchange is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our senior producer is Ellen Grimm. Our producer is Faith Meixel. Our volunteer is Priscilla Malcolm. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord, and I'm Laura Kanoi.
You've been listening to The Exchange on a special pledge-free stream on NHPR.org. Special thanks to our sustaining members for your regular and continuous support of the station that keeps New Hampshire connected to itself and the world.